And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
A lot of us have been holding our breath these days, hoping some new announcement about the sorry state of our planet was going to tip the balance and allow us to breathe again. Well, don't hold your breath any longer, because we're going to hear some news that should let the planet breathe a little easier, every single one of us. And what's a 51-million-year-old baby raptor doing in Los Angeles? That and more. It's all coming up when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The good news this week is there's no shocking news to report on the environmental front. Oh, sure, there's been the usual new release of a study that says that global warming is most certainly going to affect the phytoplankton levels in our oceans, which, as everyone who's taken Ecology 101 knows, will be felt all the way up the food chain. But other than that, it's actually been a week with some pretty good news. And to be quite honest, there's been sensational news coming from Brazil concerning the future of the tropical rainforests. Let me repeat that. There's been some sensational news from Brazil concerning the future of the tropical rainforests. And that's where we're headed during our first segment, Following the News. Segment 2 expands the story, and then in Segment 3, we're heading up to Los Angeles, where this last week saw some of the world's greatest natural wonders go up for auction at one of the world's great auction houses. And if you thought Picasso's paintings were fetching top dollar at auction these days, just wait till you hear what happens when a 51-million-year-old batch of dinosaur eggs goes up on the block. That's all coming up. But first, the news. New NASA satellite data reveals that phytoplankton populations decrease as ocean temperatures rise, which lead scientist Michael Barenfeld of Oregon State University sees as a peek at what may come as a direct result of global warming. Phytoplankton is the small, microscopic plant life which serves as the base food supply for all other ocean life. The studies warn that if and when ocean temperatures rise, the entire living component of living species that comprise the ocean's populations could decline as a direct result of decreasing concentrations of phytoplankton in the seas. What worries some, says Scott Doney of Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, is that small changes that happen in the bottom of the food web can have dramatic change for certain species at higher spots on the food chain. Everything else up the food web is going to be impacted, Doney concluded. And if by chance human populations depend on the oceans as part of their food chain, well, that legendary, most scary of meteorological terms, drought, is finding its way into the news at an alarming rate. Wednesday in the Senate, special drought relief legislation was being debated to provide emergency relief for farmers whose crop yields have crashed in direct response to near-drought conditions which are being felt in the nation's heartland states. And in Australia, the worst drought season in decades has left vast areas in the southeast bone dry as they enter their summer fire season. Already, 2,000 firefighters are battling over 50 conflagrations with the fear that in the weeks ahead, many of these fires will converge into an ever-increasingly huge fire. Tourists are being encouraged not to travel in the popular Victorian Alps, where fires have turned over 30,000 acres into charcoal. In neighboring South Wales, fire crews were fighting blazes threatening to wipe out one of the last remaining outposts of healthy koalas. And from the Victorian Alps of Australia, moving to the European Alps of Austria, residents are awaiting the onset of winter, which seems not quite ready to appear in what some say is an indication of, yes, good old global warming. All across the Northern Hemisphere, temperatures generally have been above average as winter begins, with flowers blooming where snow was supposed to be, and skiers walk through alpine meadows instead of skiing down through alpine meadows. Reinhard Bohm, chief meteorologist for Austria's Central Institute for Meteorological and Geodynamics in Vienna, stated in recent days, "We are experiencing the warmest period for this season in the past 1,300 years. And those scenic alpine glaciers, so highly prized in tourist snapshots, well, they're destined to be just a memory in the minds of those who can recall them as the 21st century continues its reaction to the modernization of the previous century." A new study reveals that birds that live in cities are changing their calls in order to be heard above the rumbles and din. Birds tend to be shortening and singing faster and at higher pitches in order to be heard. The observations made in Europe show distinct variations between urban and rural members of the same species, leading some to speculate that as the trends continue, new species of birds may develop along the urban-rural variation. As well, such studies suggest that one of the explanations as to why there are fewer bird species in cities is simply because many birds cannot be heard above the noise, and therefore disappear from the urban landscape through time. And that's the news. We continue now as we head off on a story from Brazil with a powerfully hope-filled conclusion. And then stay tuned as the great Bottoms and Butterfields stage a record-setting natural history auction. So now, our lead story. With so much bad news that we keep receiving about things that are happening to our environment, obviously issues of global warming, the crisis in our oceans, and certainly as major a story as the loss of biodiversity around the world, these are stories that are frightening. Some people really feel that these challenges are, well, they are world-class challenges. And some people actually begin to think we really can't make the difference in for time. However, there are some extraordinary efforts out there that have taken years to develop and are beginning to really, really pay off in terms of demonstrating what can be done when the right vision and the right people come together to really make a difference. And to talk about an extraordinary success story that is just being announced right now, joining us from Washington, D.C., is Gustavo Fonseca, who works with Conservation International. Gustavo, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Yes, this is a great news, unprecedented news from the Amazon. And this is not to say that we haven't have good reasons to be worried about the future of that region, but what we are witnessing here is the birth of a new generation of politicians in the Brazilian Amazon who are making careers out of making sure that their states have a forest vocation into the future as opposed to a traditional development model based on cattle ranching and based on felling forests for other purposes. So what we are just seeing here today with this new commitment by the state of Pará is yet another record in terms of size of a protected area in a tropical forest place. Just 3 years ago, we had another record coming from the same region, the state just north of Pará in Amapá, the Tumucumaque National Park. And now we have another record that has been broken with the creation of yet another big reserve. 4.25 million hectares, which is an incredible size. And this is just one of a complex of five new areas that, with a pen stroke, this current government of Pará has dedicated to conservation. So we are looking at the shift in the way that that decision makers envision a future for the Amazon. On the other hand, I believe that enlightenment is coming together with a realization that we are facing immense problems. Brazilian Amazon has been losing an average of about 20,000 square kilometers of forest every year, particularly on the southern portion, what we call the arc of deforestation, primarily pushed by soybean plantation and expansion of cattle ranching. And they've seen that that model of development has a limited capacity to address social issues. It does generate wealth for a particular sector of society for a while, but it doesn't really provide for a sustainable base upon which the states can develop on a more fair way.
Well, certainly the fact that these are our record achievements, it has terrific significance, and particularly as it's coming from areas like South America and Brazil, it's particularly significant because those areas were under such total devastation in terms of the deforestation. So many people have been involved in trying to save the tropical rainforests, that to see this level of recommitment to preserving such rainforests is certainly a positive step. But the thing that's very unique about Conservation International, and that's why I personally think that Conservation International is the premier nature and environmental preservation organization that's working on the planet right now, because you work in a very unique way, and that is the fact that you really do a lot of research to find the very specific areas that need to be preserved, and then you work very often from the highest levels on down to bring in the players who can make the decisions to set aside what are known as wildlife corridors. And I think in this particular case, this is an extraordinary example of developing and preserving wildlife corridors. Why don't you talk about the significance of this particular development in that regard?
Okay, thanks for the nice reference about our work. And we do indeed employ a lot of good science to zero in on the places that deserve our highest level of attention, because conservation resources will always be limited in relation to the size of the challenge that we have to face. Therefore, we always have tried to approach conservation in a much more focused way, trying to make a very daunting challenge quite manageable by decomposing that big challenge into manageable components. We call this priority setting strategy the biodiversity hotspots and the high biodiversity wilderness areas. They're opposites of a spectrum of high biodiversity value and high threat, which is the biodiversity hotspots, what you find in the Brazilian Atlantic forest, in the tropical Andes and the Philippines and so forth. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have what we call the high biodiversity wilderness areas, which are also of high importance in terms of the amount of biodiversity that these places contain, but they are still in a state that you can act proactively. You can actually be ahead of the game, and the conditions for conservation become much more favorable than, for instance, working on the hotspots where price of land has been growing over time because of human domination of that particular landscape. In the case of the high biodiversity wilderness areas, there's still time to do what needs to be done, and the Amazon is a very vivid example of that situation. So there is still time to look into these larger landscapes. You mentioned corridors. We call these biodiversity corridors. We look at the targets that we have for conserving biodiversity on the ground, but we also look beyond the individual reserves, the individual parks, to actually landscapes that combine areas of low impact for ecotourism, for non-timber forest products, and other sorts of low impact development, together with areas that are dedicated for biodiversity conservation. So these combinations, these mosaics of land under different uses, forms these biodiversity corridors that are really good to make compatible development as well as conservation. Given the fact that these high biodiversity wilderness areas are still a relatively low population, there isn't a lot of pressure in general for conversion, you can still be ahead of the game and develop a much more sustainable model for the people who live in that region that is not based on liquidation of natural resources, but rather on their sustainable use.
You preserved, is it 5 or 7 different unique areas?
There were 7, but 2 of them were blocked due to a court case that was put at the very last minute by groups that were opposing a couple of reserves because of overlap with another category.
Okay.
Sort of a technicality, but it was 7 reserves, but 5 of them, which is the biggest piece of it, were actually enacted.
Okay, that's why maybe I was a little confused. The thing about them is the fact that they are so strategically placed that they form, in essence, a contiguous tropical rainforest that otherwise couldn't have existed and would have been broken down into smaller and smaller forests. Talk about the overall extent of the resulting tropical rainforest, because it has terrific significance not only to the people in Brazil and the indigenous peoples there, but as well to the world. This really does make a difference.
Absolutely. And we're talking, again, about huge expenses of unbroken forest. And only in this piece that has been recently created, we see about 16 million hectares of forest that combine with what was already conserved due to action that was taken over the past few years. You have a piece that is made up of about 20 million hectares of continuous forests that are dedicated one form or another for conservation and development. This is part of the easternmost piece of what we call the Guyana Shield Corridor that towards the north will join with French Guyana, Suriname, and Guyana, and also on the eastern portion of Suriname to form the most pristine stretch of tropical forests in the world. Probably the vision that we have for that together with our partners and the governments in place is to eventually reach about 40 to 50 million hectares of continuous forests, again, under different uses, because people need to use some of these forests for their social and economic needs. But for the most part, the idea is not to have any discontinuity along this large block of forest. So this is really a truly revolutionary vision for that part of the world. What we are seeing today, and I mentioned this before, is a generation of politicians in the region that are actually winning elections based on this agenda. Just 10, 12 years ago, you had in a couple of these same states in Brazil, politicians who were winning elections distributing chainsaws to chop down the forest. And now we have the reverse happening. And it just happened in Amapá, just north of that, which has pioneered a biodiversity corridor that takes over 75% of the area of the state, dedicated, again, to a mosaic of land uses that preserve the forest. And this governor, Valdez de Góes, was just re-elected in last October in the first round of election with 56% of all valid votes. So this is an immense change from what we had before. On the other hand, we do need to look for sources of funds to make sure that this vision that at this stage is a political commitment really gets supported by real financial commitments. These areas are not wealthy. I mean, they are the home of impoverished populations that need to make a living and need to, in some cases, resort to unsustainable uses of these resources in order to survive. These areas are performing an immense service in terms of carbon, in terms of climatic regulation and all that to the entire world without receiving any financial benefits for that service that's being provided. So we need to find the necessary mechanisms to internalize those values and to be able to make this political commitment that we are seeing all over the region now be reflected financially as well as in terms of better conditions and better education for the local communities.
We're beginning to see the payoff for years and years of effort to turn back the seemingly unstoppable drive to grab the Earth's resources. Should we hope for future successes? We find out when your Voice of the Earth continues following this short break.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.